We know what you're thinking. I just want jeans that look great, feel great, and hold up. At Ariat, we've been doing some thinking too. We're thinking about fit that moves with you, no matter where the ride takes you. Durability that stands up to hard work, harder play, and comfort that never quits. And all this thinking, it's really just about more living. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find your Ariat jeans at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.
Hello all, welcome to Up the Poshcast, the podcast made by the fans for the fans. Grab yourself a drink, put your feet up and listen in. And by the way, there could be some strong language.
Welcome back to Up the Poshcast, everyone. Peterborough United season is rolling nicely with a second away league win on the bounce after a 2-1 victory at Exeter City. Posh's first win at St James's Park on the South Coast since 1992. Posh went behind in the fourth minute to a Rhys Cole shot on the half turn before a place finish from Malik Motherseal and an almost inexplicable 30-yard hit from Manny Fernandez turned it around for Posh in the first half. A missed Archie Collins penalty in the second did not come back to haunt Posh, and they saw out the game fairly comfortably in the end. Today, I'm joined by Ash, Lods, Charlie, and me, Harry. Four of us today. Today, we'll be covering the game at Exeter, obviously, and we'll also be previewing next week's game, which is at home to Wrexham. I will start by coming to you, Ash. How are you feeling after that one?
Yeah, I think it's really, I feel really positive. That's my third trip to Exeter now. And like you said, that's obviously the first time that we've won there. We've been there last season and the season before and managed to throw away leads, whether that be through silly red cards or just all round bad management and bad substitutions. So it sort of felt nice to go. We obviously conceded in the fourth minute, which was a concern, an early goal conceded, but then to then see out the game for essentially 90 minutes of football and not concede was really positive. And overall, I thought it was a positive display across the pitch. So all good my side.
I am very happy that we got the away win. Obviously, Exeter's a bit of a bogey ground for us, but I am going to put a bit of a negative spin on it. I don't know if we were lucky to win, but the result could have definitely gone either way. I think Exeter fans could probably consider themselves quite unlucky. If you look at the XG stats, they're very, very similar. Both teams had a lot of chances. It wasn't even a case of we took our chances because I think we missed a lot, especially with Archie's missed penalty, which I'm sure we'll come on to. I think Exeter's finishing was absolutely terrible, and that's what won us the game rather than anything that we done ourselves. But like I said, a win is a win. I'd rather win ugly than lose and play pretty. So I am happy. But I don't think the performance is anything we can rave about. I'd like to see a lot more.
Yeah, I think I'll agree with you, Lods. I definitely felt yesterday thinking we'd done a little bit of a smash and grab, which, you know, is something that I feel I've seen happen to Posh quite a few times, where I think Exeter, you know, they had 60% possession. They were really, they had a decent game and we were quite lucky. But that's what I was actually quite happy about. It was a very different kind of performance. And it felt like it was probably on a technical level about a 5 out of 10. But we hit, you know, 9, 10 out of 10 in terms of the desire, the just dying to defend our goal, the blocks, the winning the headers, and the second half, especially when that atmosphere started to ramp up after the missed penalty. You know, it was just a barrage and our young team didn't buckle. And that was what I enjoyed the most about yesterday. So, yeah, it was very enjoyable. Left with a big smile on my face. Maybe we were a bit lucky in terms of the technical aspects of the game, but you can't doubt that this squad will give everything this season.
I'm feeling pretty positive, Charlie. I think that Exeter, one, are probably a better team than we expected them to be. And they demonstrated that early on. They were getting a lot of purchase down the wings, as we were. Their number 11, Ali, I saw he was playing non-league a couple of seasons ago. Only played 10 games or something for Exeter last year. He was unbelievable in the first half. And, you know, Curtis did well, but there were times where he managed to get himself on Manny, and he beat Manny multiple times with their left back, often putting it over the top to him with a lot of success. But honestly, we did what we needed to do in terms of getting the goals. I think had it gone to 2-2, or we'd gone 2-1 down, I think we'd have found a way yesterday. Genuinely, you talk about missed chances, but there were enough chances there to miss in the first place, right? It's another game after the Shrewsbury one where we've had 4 or 5 very strong chances in the game. And if we'd needed to get another goal, I think we would have done. And one thing I would say that perhaps is a different angle for the concern for me was that some of the players were starting to cramp up towards the end of the game. And I do worry a little bit about that 90-minute fitness element. I think one of the people who one of the podcast listeners, I think it was Martin Nourish, made this point that he was worried about seeing that all the cramps were coming in the back line towards the end. Completely agree with this. We never saw this last season. And I'm given that we don't have a lot of depth at the back, I'm hoping that we're going to see a little bit more energy in the legs and all the way through to the end of the 90 in the coming weeks.
Yeah, I mean, I'll come in there because I think that, you know, Fergie always says in his interviews during pre-season that he doesn't feel his squad are going to be fully fit until sort of the end of August, start of September. You know, I think he did at some point mention Wrexham at home as sort of the last game before the squad will be properly up to speed. And you know what? I think that you saying that there weren't tired performances last season might be a bit harsh as well. I think we, you know, while we maybe didn't lose our first game in our first three and look as tired, you know, you think about Derby at home when we just got ran all over. That was, you know, a game that was quite a tired performance. And so fitness will grow. And I just like that even though we were so unfit. And I mean, I don't know if you'll see the picture of Sam Curtis at the end of the game yesterday where he had some sort of like massive cut or bruise or whatever it was or on his throat. We just played through the pain barrier. There were players down. Wallin went down with cramp. Fernandez went down with cramp. And yet they still kept sprinting forward to make that defensive line. They kept going right until the end. They were flat out on their feet at the end of the game. But that's what you want to see. And from a young team who are still getting fit, that is what you like. So I think, yes, fitness will have to improve, but it will improve. And I thought just the fact that they persevered, even though they weren't fully fit, was just a sign of what a nice squad we've put together here.
Yeah, I do agree. We did look really good defensively. Absolutely fighting for their lives towards the end. Wallin was an interesting one because he got booked quite early on and I was worried for him. I thought with his aggression, the way he sprints out to attackers, I thought he might be at risk of getting a second yellow. And when he got cramp, I just assumed that we'd be giving Nevitt some minutes. But it's interesting, Fergie didn't make any defensive substitutions. He brought Hayes on instead, which at the time I thought was a bit strange. But it might be something that we see quite regularly where rather than substituting our defenders and trying to hold on to a lead, we bring on the fresh attackers where we can get the ball high up the pitch. And that's something we've seen Ricky do the last couple of games where he's been outstanding in the last 20 minutes. I think he's now going to cement his place as a super sub rather than this debate of whether he should start games over Malik or not, because the impact he has on the last couple of games, there was two very, very good runs that he made at the game at Exeter. And I think had he played more than 30 minutes, he would have been man of the match because we all gave him scores of 8 and higher.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that it's nice that actually Ricky is starting to be appreciated by lots more of the fan base. Obviously, we know that his finishing is not obviously the strongest, but it's nice to see that he's finally being appreciated for the asset that he is. And he's going to obviously play an important part this season for us. I think that the difficult point that we've got is that, like Lodz said, I'm not sure that I agree with Lodz in that he will cement himself as our 20 to 30 minute man. I think that there will be games where we need him from the start, where we, especially at home, I think that that's going to be probably where he starts more of his games at home versus away, where he can run those defenders tired and make the space for the rest of our flair players, let's say, before then bringing Mother Seal on. How many times did we see it last season where Ricky got 60 to 70 minutes and then Mother Seal comes onto the pitch and either scores a goal or makes their defenders look silly, because I think that they've both got that in their locker, whether that be through running from the edge of our box all the way through to the byline in the Exeter box yesterday, or obviously there was the one where he ran from midway through the halfway line and then at Shrewsbury and then cut the ball back. I think that it's just nice that one of our own is finally being appreciated. That's for sure.
Yeah, I agree. And I think Ricky's been fantastic. I just want to sort of bring it to the defence again, because I do think yesterday's performance was a game for the defenders. I think last week at Shrewsbury was a game where we really got to see the attackers. This week was a defenders game. And I'll bring it to the two fullbacks. Obviously, first of all, Jack Sparks, who I thought was a lot better this week again than he was in previous weeks. He obviously has gotten over his stomach bug. He's slowly getting to fitness. He's one that you could tell was really flagging. You know, he actually, defensively, he looks more solid than Burrows already, in terms of he won a lot of headers at the back post yesterday. It felt like he was getting involved at the back post quite a lot. He comes in and he's a little bit more compact with the two centre halves, which I like as well at times. You know, when we were properly dug in, he was really helpful. And then obviously Curtis was just absolutely bombing it down the line. He was unbelievable. I'll give this to Sheffield United fans. You know, you guys told us he'd be good, and you were right. I don't know if it's too early to say that I think he could have played a part for you had he stayed at Sheffield United this season. But I do think if he carries on like this and goes back to you next season, you're still in the Championship, he will be an absolute nailed on starter, because he's been superb, and he put his body on the line yesterday. Was excellent. So yeah, the fullbacks, Sparks, I know Tobba said that in the opinion thing, he was better, and then obviously Sam Curtis was just splendid.
Yeah, I think that the important thing with Sparks is that obviously he sort of got battered by all of us last week for maybe whether that was a management decision or a player decision, probably be the wrong thing. So it's nice to sort of say that he can sort of put that behind him and move onto the new week and then the new game. One thing that, like Charlie mentioned, is that he is slightly more compact with Valin and Fernandez at the back. I think that that's maybe down to Otto and who he's got in front of him. I think that Otto is much better at contributing defensively compared to what Mason Clark was. So I think that that naturally helps sort of pull Sparks back into the defence, because he knows that he can sort of rely on Otto to be there as an option rather than just having to play it clear. That's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, on Otto, I thought it was an interesting performance from him, because he was absolutely electric in the first half. And agree with you absolutely on the defensive side of things. It's great to see a player. This really goes to the point of our recruitment, who did not, so it would have peer, do that much at Harrogate. You know, some of their fans online when we signed him were saying that he's okay, but you're seeing now with the fact that he's already set up, you know, he set up chances at Shrewsbury. I think he got an assist at Shrewsbury as well, didn't he? And he got an assist yesterday for Motherseal, which came from him putting himself in the right place and tackling. There's an element of players being able to flourish with better players around them that we managed to identify in Otto, and I'm now so excited. I can't believe we're talking. I fully expected him to be a bench player of the Ajiboy type well into the season. I did not anticipate that we would be talking about him as one of the best players of the first month. And yeah, it's really fantastic to see on that front. I will move it on to some of the questions that we've received in. And Dale Routledge has got us a question, which is interested to know our thoughts on Exeter's goal. He felt it was another down the middle that shouldn't beat Jed. I guess, Ash, who are you putting this one towards? If anyone, was it just a good Exeter play, or are you pinning this a little bit on one of our players?
I you know me, I like to be harsh on goalkeepers. As a failed very low level Division 4 goalkeeper and won lots of things at under 18, but I think I know that I tweeted that Bilo probably would have saved that goal yesterday, but having watched it back, I think that maybe my statement was a little bit harsh. He's very clearly unsighted, and ultimately you can't save what you can't see. It was a very good strike from the Exeter lad. But I think that it was more maybe the defending, and we had opportunities to clear it and maybe throw our bodies on the line. Now, that then raises another point of how many deflected goals have we conceded this season? Like, are we throwing our bodies on the line correctly? But I definitely think that there was a chance that, obviously, I know that Manny went up for a header and he probably could have cleared it better or into a different space rather than sort of to the edge of the box into the D. So I'm not going to blame anyone. Exeter started quickly, but if we are going to sort of say who could have maybe done better, I think that it's probably going to be Manny, unfortunately.
Yeah, I have to agree. Between Wallin and Manny yesterday, I think the performances were quite negligible. And I think the only reason for that is because of Manny's ridiculous goal. Defensively, in the first 40 minutes again, which is a bit of a pattern for Manny, he let his man behind him more than one occasion. It was about three or four times where someone got a run in behind him. And like I mentioned earlier, if Exeter's finishing was better, I think that would have been the reason we didn't get a win yesterday. But that said, he did go on a stupid 30, 40 yard run and then absolute twat the ball in from 30 yards out. I don't think there's any other way I can describe that shot. The goalkeeper could have done a lot better. But if that's what Manny is capable of, being a calamity at the back, but just casually strolling up the field and twatting the ball in from 30 yards, then I think we'll take it.
I think you've been a bit harsh in a few areas there, Lods. First of all, I wouldn't call Manny a calamity at the back. I think yesterday, other than the first goal, which he cleared to the edge of the area and wasn't great, but still wasn't disastrous at the point where he cleared it. I think he was really solid. And you said that sort of the difference between Manny and Wallin was negligible. So I'm just going to throw some stats out there. Manny cleared the ball 15 times. Wallin cleared the ball 5 times. Wallin won 0% of his 4 aerial duels. Manny won 4 of his 5, 80% of his duels. Manny won 60% of his ground duels as well. So did Wallin, which is supposedly Wallin's stronger area over him. I'd say that Manny defensively did outshine Wallin. And although his header clearance for the first goal wasn't great, he more than made up with it with the goal, first of all. And then he was probably our best defender. I mean, when I was in that ground, other than Sam Curtis, when I was in the ground, it just felt like every time the ball went into the box, there was Manny Fernandez diving, throwing himself at it. And I just thought he was sensational.
I agree with you that Manny was good defensively at the end. It was just the first 40 minutes where I think he let his man go too many times. But if you also look at the stats, you'll see that Wallin's passing accuracy was about 11% higher than Manny's. He made 4 accurate long balls. Manny made none. I would rather my centre-back get the ball and play a decent pass out rather than just hoofing it up the field, which, judging by the stats, is what Manny did. So I think Wallin gives us a much more in possession. And secondly, we have to remember that he did play the majority of the game on a yellow card. And it must be difficult for a centre-back that's as aggressive as him to defend in a game like that and not get a second yellow. So I think you also have to give him credit for that as well, especially considering he did have cramp for a period of that game as well.
Well, it's nice to be only a few games into the season and to be debating as a podcast between which of our centre-backs is better rather than which of our centre-backs is worse. So this is a good conversation, gents. I'm enjoying it. I'll move on to our second question that we've got from some of our viewers. Dave Porter has asked, who do you think should be our penalty taker? Before I bring this to you, Charlie, just to reiterate for those listening, Archie Collins missed his penalty halfway through the second half. The well-won penalty by Ricky, who had run the length near his damn it, the length of the field. In fact, no, he hadn't really run the length of the field. Randall had passed him through. He'd taken a nice touch towards the keeper and then at the last moment took a touch away from him and got cleared out by their keeper. But Archie, it was at the keeper's mid-level to the keeper's right. Fairly routine save. I'm You know, it's been asked by a viewer. Are we taking a view on this after one missed penalty, Charlie? Are you changing our penalty taker? Who do you think our penalty taker should be?
I think our penalty taker when he's on the pitch is Malik. I think that's been decided. But obviously when he goes off, which realistically, I don't think Malik will play a full 90 often. And I think a lot of the time penalties do come in the last third of the game. And I think Malik does miss the last third of the game for quite a lot. Because Ricky's going to be the impact sub. I don't see why a striker wouldn't take a penalty, though. So unless Ricky's bad at them, I would always want my striker taking penalties because goals for strikers are what feeds them. It gives them confidence. And we said that we want to find a way. Fergie said that he wants to find a way to get the strikers scoring goals. Well, giving them a free shot at the goalkeeper from 12 yards every now and again is probably a way to get that happening. So I'd have Malik or Ricky, whichever one's on the pitch. Those two should be the takers. And if they're both on it together, then they can argue about it at the time.
The thing is with penalties, is none of us know how good any of them are at penalties. It should just be as easy as they've got a free kick at the goalkeeper from 12 yards out. It's easier to score than not score. But Archie's penalty was bad. I've played in goal quite a bit, and that is the perfect height and the perfect positioning for a save. If you dive the right way, you're saving that, even if it's accidentally. What I would say is last season we had Burrows as our penalty taker and he was a good penalty taker, but I can't help but feel we chose Burrows because we wanted to stat pad him because we knew we were selling him in the summer. So I wouldn't be surprised if we pick a player that we think we're going to be selling in the summer as our penalty taker after Archie's miss. Because like I said, it is just kicking the ball from 12 yards out. It shouldn't be anything that we overthink unless there's a player that's in a previous club or in a youth team has been like the main penalty taker and has a really good record. But judging by Hutchie's miss yesterday, it's not him.
Yeah, I think I don't want to bash the penalty too much, but obviously a really disappointing one. I think the more concerning point was that it sort of felt like there wasn't anybody ready to either step up or that it hadn't been pre-decided. It sort of felt like Mothersill is the penalty taker. That was what was discussed before the game. And then it got round to us having a penalty and we've gone, oh shit, he's not on the pitch. Who's taking that now? Now, for me, in that scenario, I think it's your captain that should step forwards. They're the one that should take the leadership of the situation. And I know that obviously Archie's the vice captain, but I think it should have been Kyprianou ready to step up. He's obviously scored more goals last season than Archie Collins. So kind of disappointed not to see him step up or at least take the initiative and sort of gather people around and then have a quick on-field debate to sort of make that decision. I think that the sort of the looking round of like, oh, looking over to the bench, who's taking this type thing sort of didn't help the scenario, especially being in front of that big bank. The other option is that you give it to somebody that really doesn't care. And you stick somebody like Manny Fernandez on it and he just absolutely thundercunts it into the top corner like Harry Maguire did in the Euros a few years back. And you just hit it because if you hit it hard enough, even if the keeper does get something on it, it's going to go through him and then you're sort of laughing. So I think maybe a little bit more preparation and hopefully as we sort of move into the season, I think that they'll be definitely more organised on that one. But we won the game, so let's not make too much of a deal about missing a penalty. Now, obviously, the flip side of that would have been we miss it, they score, they probably score another, and then we lose the game. But I think that we don't need to be too negative about missing penalties when we've won the game. That's for sure.
You know, I'm sticking with Archie. Genuinely, if you got to trust that when Fergie says in the post match interview, the best player in training at penalties, I think it's excluding Mothersill, is Archie, then, you know, we've got one miss here. He could go and score the next 20 that he takes. And he'll learn from this. I think that, if anything, I'd be sticking with him for at least the next one. If we're lucky, maybe we'll have some penalties against Gillingham in 10 days' time and we can see who's really got it, whether it is a Manny 100-mile-an-hour shot that's the answer, or Archie steps up, or maybe someone else entirely.
Yeah, I think just going back to the situation, I think that that's definitely something that's got to be factored in. You got Archie Collins taking a penalty at his old club in front of that big bank. Like, I never felt like he was going to score that penalty. We got a penalty there last season and Burrows took it and he scored and he ends up shushing the crowd again like Burrows did for plenty of goals. But I think that that's another thing that does also need to be taken into consideration is where are we and who are we playing against? Now, like, if we forward think to somebody like Burton, we know that Mothersfield wants to score against Burton. So keep him on the pitch, let him take the penalty. And he probably puts it in the back of the net. So that's my concern is that there was emotion involved in that. And like JCH doesn't score against Bristol Rovers and hopefully doesn't score against Posh, it never really felt like Collins wanted to score against Exeter yesterday. And say with Randall when he missed that header. So he sort of is what it is.
All right. Just to restate, in wrapping up our discussion on Exeter, our man of the match as a podcast, which you can see all the individual ratings for if you go onto our Twitter account at Up the Poshcast. Our man of the match was Sam Curtis, who by all accounts is the consensus man of the match. He was man of the match on the Posh official poll. And also I noticed that he was in the Who Scored Team of the Week at right back. Very well done to him. No more words need to be said, I think, because he anyone who watched the performance yesterday knows that he was fantastic. Posh next on Saturday, which is the time you're listening to this, five days away. Posh take on Wrexham. Hollywood FC have started well in League One with 7 points from their first three games, including a comprehensive 3-0 victory over Reading in their most recent match. Given that start, Charlie, we could be looking at a second playoff team in two matches at London Road to start the season.
Yeah, we could. I mean, there's no doubt that Wrexham are a team that are going to win a lot of football matches this season. But they're a weird team as well. I mean, they don't play that sort of typical style that teams at the top of the table play, where they've played, you know, they've played enough games, have a decent amount of data now on them. And they're the bottom team in the league for possession. They have around 35% possession in games, which is a bit weird. And then they also a second bottom of the league for XG, expected goals. So they've scored quite a few goals just from pure moments of magic. You know, you saw RX boy Jack Marriott score that screamer on the opening day. He's you know, firing a bit this season. And they're just a team that rely on moments of individual qualities from experienced players that don't have the legs to press all game, but just know that at this level, they're a really decent player. And so I think if we can shut them down and if we show them very little respect, and the big centre halves are going to be good because they put a crazy amount of crosses into the box. If we show them no respect and we defend our area well, we should walk pretty much all over this Wrexham team, because while they've got good individual quality, as a team, they are not ready for this level in terms of their style of football at all. And they're going to be made to pay for it. And I reckon it could be next Saturday.
Yeah, so I think that it's important, like Charlie says, that we've got to get out the blocks fast. And sort of following up from what we said about the Ricky after 60-minute debate, I think that it's important that he starts the game on Saturday and he gets running at those Wrexham and defenders from very early on, pressing their goalkeeper and just letting them know that it's going to be a long day. Obviously, they've sort of, Wrexham got used to winning games over the last two seasons, and they've obviously carried that onto this season. But I think that they're sort of going to, I think like Charlie says, I think that there's going to be a shot coming their way, especially if they're going to be happy for us to have the ball. Like, they can't score if they don't have the ball. And I'm pretty confident, like Charlie says, that we are going to introduce them to League One, let's say.
If I were to be a bit more of a devil's advocate, and a little bit more circumspect about this, my concern, and this arises a little bit from what we saw against Exeter, was that when teams go direct, 90% of the time, Valin and Manny are dealing with it. But that 10% where they don't is chaos in our box. And if Wrexham don't go behind and we're having to make changes, Ricky comes off if he starts, or we're getting ground down by them, you know, at the other end of the field and we're not able to score, and they nick one, even if it's against the run of play, I see that as more conceivable than I saw it in the last two games, for example, just because they have the individual quality there. They have a formula. I'll give you a couple of examples from last season. Cheltenham at home and Stevenage away, two direct teams that we really had some challenges with when it came to the longer balls and just a bit more of a heavy metal football style. Even if it is two different centre backs at the back now, we'll have to see. With that being said, I think we're coming up to the natural end of this. But any other comments from my host before we move on to the predictions?
Yeah, so I just wanted to add in as well that I think that they are coming to their natural end of their progression. They're not selling out away ends. They've not taken us up on the offer of extra tickets in the GH display, which means that either their fans are getting bored of it, but there's such demand. Like, they were putting shirts out and people were buying them in their thousands and shipping them to America so that people could buy them. Like, I think that people are sort of getting a little bit bored of the whole Hollywood FC thing. And if the fans are getting bored of it and the outside influence are getting bored of it, then I think that the owners are ultimately going to get bored of it, and their little toy that they've had to play with for the last 4 years is going to start fading away, and then the money will stop being put into it. I'm confident that they've sort of hit their max level now. This whole that they're going to climb into the Championship and then climb into the Premier League is not going to continue. I think that they'll solidify themselves as a League One team, but they're either going to have to change the way that they play their football, or they're going to have to just be happy with a mid-table finish, I'm afraid. But, you know, we'll find out after next Saturday. But I'm confident that we can show them what League One is all about and what you need to do to be successful in League One, that's for sure.
And on that then, for those who've been long-time listeners about the podcast, know that we do a score prediction at the end of every podcast. Ash, I think I've got an inkling of which way you're heading with this. What are you going for as your score prediction for the Wrexham game?
I'm going to go 4-0. I'm feeling confident. I feel like we'll keep a clean sheet. I think that we'll stick with Manny and Volin at the back, and that Neville will have to wait until potentially Gillingham to get his first start in a competitive fixture to Posh. And then I also think that our first goal scorer is going to be Ricky on Saturday. I do think he's going to start the game. I'm relatively confident about that. And then he's going to bag a goal in front of the London Road end, because we will be attacking the GH display in the second end, much to Charlie's enjoyment.
Lods, who have you got? I always get that bit wrong. What have you got as your score prediction?
I think Wrexham's one of them teams that we should beat if we just play our normal football. I say it quite a lot. There's only a few teams that we should really be worrying about. I don't think Wrexham's one of them. I wouldn't change the lineup at all. I'd even keep Mothersill up front. Like you said, I think Wrexham's squad's quite an experienced, ageing one. Ricky's pace will cause more damage to them in the last 20 minutes like it has done. So I'm going to go for a 3-0 win. And I think two of the goals will come towards the end of the game.
Charlie?
I am going to go for, this is going to be quite an out there prediction, I'm going to go for 5-1 Posh. I think that Wrexham are going to seriously struggle against our fast football. And I think if we get one or two goals early on in an atmosphere, because there's going to be an atmosphere at the game, you know, just from pure tickets sold so far, the fact that there'll be a bit of a buzz around, you know, Fergie's old club, blah, 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 blah. Wrexham will be giving it large. I've seen there's been a few Spain flags in their away ends so far this season. So that'll be nice with the GH gang that like to pick on away fans. So, yeah, I think just the momentum that we can pick up when we're at our best is going to... So Wrexham are going to succumb to it. I think they'll score one back late. I think it'll be 5-0 until quite late in the game, and they'll pull one back from a corner or something that we'll switch off from. But no, I think it's going to be a great day, great atmosphere at London Road. And yeah, I think Wrexham are going to be welcomed pleasantly to League One.
All right, I'm going to annoy you all because for the Shrewsbury game, I predicted a draw. And I was doing it tongue-in-cheek for that one. But I'm wary now. We are starting to get a little bit arrogant predicting 4 and 5 goals. I think it'll be 1-1. I think that that will be an improvement from some of our games last season where we struggled against direct teams. And we should not underestimate a team that's come out the gates with 7 points and pumped Reading on Saturday. Forget about the low XG and the direct hoofball and not being ready for this level, as some of my co-hosts have said today. It is going to be harder than we think. I actually sincerely believe that it will be 1-1, and then we will probably see it as a good point by the end of the game.
Reading are trash, though. Let's not forget that. Like, they're not very good. We're better.
Well, we'll see when we play them, right? I think we're there, gents. I guess one final thing for the listeners. By the time we record next, the League One transfer window will have closed. It closes at 11 p.m. on Friday, 30th of August. So it will have closed just before the Wrexham game. I presume anyone, if we were to sign anyone else that was signed on deadline day, would not be eligible for that game. It's usually 24 hours. And an open question. Anyone listening, please let us know. Do you think we still need to make some signings? If we do, where? What positions? Any particular names in mind? It's one that I think we as a podcast will discuss next week. I don't know if any of my co-hosts have got any thoughts of their own, though, for the time being on who what they think we need, if anything.
I think we need a centre-back. We've not seen Nevitt yet. We don't know how good he is. We've only seen him in pre-season, so we can make assumptions. I don't think Fergie will fancy Manny as good enough to be a top two League One defender. If we're still going for top two, I think we need a better centre-back. And I think, judging by what both Dara and Fergie have said, we are going to try and get a centre-back in. We might be relying on Critchlow and Adjaboy still leaving. But we've just had the money from Schmodix come through, and we have got potentially money from the Tony to Saudi Arabia deal coming through as well. The only other position I suggest we might need is striker. But I'm quite happy with Ricky and Mothersill as the options for now, and reevaluate in January. If Ricky was to be sold, then yeah, definitely a top League One striker that we can confidently say will get us 25 goals.
Yeah, I think I'm going to say that I'm happy with the squad as they are. Like, normally, I think that's maybe just because when we sign people, I don't know who they are. I don't know where they've come from. I don't know whether they're very good. So how can we say that what we've not got in the building, like we didn't include Adjaboy or Critchlow in the squad yesterday. So I think it's clear that Fergie's happy to move on. But yeah, no, I'm happy. I think that like we mentioned, obviously Adjaboy and Critchlow out the door would be fantastic, so that we've got a little bit more room come January.
100%. I just think, listen, I'm happy with the recruitment we've done. And I think the announcement this week that could bring me the biggest joy out of any announcement we could get into it to do with transfers would be that Romany Critchlow has made a permanent move to Salford City or something. He's gone. We can rest easy. I don't feel like he's the best influence on the dressing room. I think he's a bit of a strop. You see it sometimes on the side of the pitch. Just get him gone. It's not worked, his time at the club. He's got a load of our fans blocked on Twitter. It's not been a good transfer. It happens sometimes. We signed him on a free. It's fine. That's all I've got to say on the transfers. We'll get into the nitty gritty next week, I'm sure. But for now, just get some of that dead wood out.
One thing we haven't mentioned, which is still a possibility, Katongo's not gone anywhere. I know we've been saying all summer that he'll go to a championship club, but we do need a centre-back. Fergie's changed his mind with the midfield options, but signing Katongo would be a good option at centre-back, and then a backup option for midfield as well. I feel like it will tick one and a half or two boxes for him if we can get that done.
All right. I mean, I'm going to keep my cards close to my chest, except to say perhaps we had Sissoko and now we don't have Sissoko. So I'd like to think we're trying to get another midfielder. Or maybe the emergence of Donair Brian Brady was such a surprise that we now think we've got the four that we need in Collins, Kip, Donair, and Ryan de Havilland when he's back from injury.
we shall see. Right. Thank you, everyone, for listening. We will catch you next week. Up the posh.
Up the posh.
Up the posh.
Thank you all for listening. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Up the Poshcast. Let us know your feedback. Give us any ideas for topics you would like to discuss or any questions you'd like us to answer. Up the Poshcast.
Well, who's fucking on? Fucking, I'm down.